Welcome to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. My name is Natalie Nidham. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology to ancestral health practices, personalized interventions, and a very special interest of mine, peptides. Enjoy the show.
Hey folks, welcome back to the show. It's going to be a great one. We're going to be talking about peptides, our favorite topic. But before we go on to that, I would love to invite you to please leave us a review on whatever platform you are listening to this podcast or watching it on YouTube. This is how we climb up the ranks, and that is how we get amazing guests for you guys. And also, make sure you go to natnidham.com and sign up for my newsletter, because that's how you get your behind-the-scenes look at the podcast episodes, at my favorite biohacks, and also in this spring and summer where we could possibly meet up in person. Okay, so before we jump into anything else, I would like to thank our sponsor, Sensate, which can be your ultimate solution for a calmer mind as well as improved well-being. Did you know that the vagus nerve is a direct connection to your primal brain? And research has shown that activating that vagus nerve can help to calm the brain medulla, the primal brain, reducing stress and anxiety. Sensate is the pioneer in non-invasive sound resonance technology, uniquely designed to gently soothe your nervous system by targeting your sternum. So what does that mean in English exactly? That means you've got this very smooth, palm-sized black stone thing that sits right on your chest bone and vibrates to music. Works with an app. I love this thing. I use it in the middle of the day. I use it before bed. They've got beautiful tracks, and it really makes a difference to my stress levels and my ability to focus. Now, Sensate users in general have reported remarkable improvements, including enhanced sleep quality, increased heart rate variability, reduced anxiety levels, improved focus, as well as an overall sense of well-being. Now, by using Sensate, you can say goodbye to stress and hello to a much more relaxed, centered you. Try it now and experience transformative stress reduction. Your journey to a calmer mind can start right now with Sensate. Use code NAT at getsensate.com/NAT. Now, if you followed along, whether on social or on this podcast, you know that I talk about peptides and their benefits quite a lot. So that's why I'm so excited for today's episode with repeat guest, Dr. Suzanne Ferret. In this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast, Dr. Ferret and I dive into several different peptides, their benefits, and new research that is evolving. Now, a lot of these peptides are kind of off the map because of the FDA, but we're still going to talk about them because we do believe that they're going to come back one way or another. Now, we discuss the blood-brain barrier, its importance, and how to prevent it from becoming compromised. And we also address how some peptides like BPC and thymosin beta 4 may help mitigate damage from traumatic brain injury. Others like VIP and GLP-1 agonists can help to regulate circadian rhythm, improve gut health, and potentially benefit conditions like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. You're going to want to join us as we discuss these peptides and more. Now, overall, this episode also offers guidance on how peptides have been used for various health issues, but also the importance of having healthy lifestyle habits in place before diving into peptides. Those healthy lifestyle habits will ultimately help to support peptide efficacy, and so that is really where everyone needs to start. Now, Dr. Suzanne Ferret uses bioidentical hormones. She's used peptide therapy, neural therapy, and regenerative medicine to treat patients with endocrine, mitochondrial, infectious, autoimmune, and neurodegenerative diseases. Her thriving practice, Vine Medical, treats executives and athletes from around the world, as well as patients with chronic or unusual diseases. And most excitingly, her new book, Counterclockwise, will be released March 4th, 2024. Actually, by the time this podcast comes out, it will have been released on March 4th of 2024. Now, to find out more about Dr. Ferret, you can go to vinemedical.com. You can also find her on YouTube and on Instagram at Dr. S. F-E-R-R-E-E. And the book, Counterclockwise, will be available, is probably available right now on Amazon.com as well as BarnesandNoble.com. And you can check out the free first chapter, vinemedical.com/counterclockwise. And Dr. Suzanne, once you hear her speak, she writes like she speaks. It's a really great book to read. It's very accessible, but it's full of great information. Okay, one more sponsor to thank before we jump into the episode. Energize your body and boost your performance with Beam Minerals, the key to unlocking your full energy potential. Just like your house needs electricity to function, your body relies on minerals to power every major system. Low minerals mean low energy and low performance. It's literally like living with a partial electricity supply. You do not want to settle for a bodily blackout. So one shot glass of B minerals per day is all it takes to turn the lights back on. You can experience a surge of energy that revitalizes essential systems, promoting faster healing, clearer thinking, and optimal functioning. And I'm going to tell you a little story. I was starting to wake up with these crazy cramps in my feet recently. And this went on for a couple of weeks, and I was waiting for my new shipment of B minerals. Well, guess what? I started those B minerals, and what I did is I take an extra shot of the electrolyte formula at night. So I do my electrolyte, my boost first thing in the morning. Then I take a second shot of the electrolyte at night. And ever since I started doing that, cramps are gone. Amazing, right? So you can give your body the minerals it craves and watch as it performs at its peak. All you have to do is go to beamminerals.com and use code Natalie, that's N-A-T-H-A-L-I-E, to get 20% off your order. And now let's jump into the episode.
Hey folks, just a quick reminder that all of the information presented in this podcast is for information purposes only. No medical advice, no diagnosing, no treatments suggested here. Before you try anything that you hear about or learn about here, make sure that you check with your medical provider.
Welcome back to the show, Dr. Suzanne Ferre-Turner. It is such a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you, Natalie. It's so great to see you as usual.
Yeah, this is going to be so great. I always love seeing you. I love even more hanging out with you and all these conversations. And of course, you, by the time this comes out, I think we've timed the release, the drop of this podcast to be right around your book launch.
Excellent.
Which I think is, I mean, it's so exciting because good books on the subject we're going to talk about today are pretty hard to come by. There's a dearth of them in the world. And you have this beautiful way of writing that I think is going to resonate. We were just talking about this actually, both with the provider community as well as the end user community. And I think when it comes to peptides, and you would know this better than me, like as a clinician, it must be so much better to have a patient that comes in and even has a clue about the topic.
Yes. Did you ever know there was a clothing company called Sims a couple of years ago? Did you ever know Sims? They're all around the country. Their tagline was, "An educated consumer is our best customer." And that's exactly how I feel. Like I know it's sometimes frustrating for people when they do a Google search and come in with, "This is what I think I should do," or "This is what I need." It's helpful for me. This field is so big and so emerging that it's wonderful to have someone come to me and say, "What do you know about this new thing?" Because I can't keep up with all of it. And I'm trying to study the new peptides that are available and the old, make sure we get all the new research on the old peptides and the whatever new things that we're doing. You know, we're doing neural therapy here in the office, which is really great. Mm-hmm. So many new things, EBU. And so to be able to keep up with all of that, I'm certainly going to miss things. So I love having the extra influence of really smart patients.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And, you know, and that's the thing, like there are two kinds of doctors in the world. There's the kind that, you know, as soon as the patient walks in with a stack of papers, kind of goes running for the hills saying, "Nope, I'm the doctor." And then there's people like you who are like, "Really? What'd you find? Let's check it out." You know, and it really speaks to that partnership between the caregiver, the doctor and the practitioner and the patient. And I would guess that you've attracted and you continue to attract that type of patient. Like, you know, it's that whole "your vibe attracts your tribe" kind of thing.
Yes. It's part of what we try to do here is create a space for healing rather than being the healer, realizing that the patient is the healer. And I'm just creating a space where you can make that happen.
Amazing. All right. Mm-hmm. Music to our ears. So, you know, when it comes down to our conversations, it's always kind of hard to figure out what are we going to talk about today? Because there's, it's like being at this giant buffet. So I think what we'll do is we'll start with a couple of topics and then we're just going to see where it takes us. And so I'm thinking back to the conversation we had, we started before recording. The thing I thought we would start with is a conversation around the blood-brain barrier. Because, you know, as people know, the blood-brain barrier is this brilliant creation by Mother Nature that keeps our brain safe from all the things that may get into the body. And so very, very particular about what goes in and what leaves the brain and how. But as like everything else, it can get damaged and things can start to go sideways. So I thought maybe we would start by talking about how might a person know that their blood-brain barrier has been compromised? Can it be repaired? What are the things that might disrupt that kind of that barrier between the brain and the rest of the world?
So it's this as you suggest, this lovely coating around the brain that protects it from the environment outside. But it can be compromised by all kinds of things. Probably toxins are probably a big one in our society in general. You know, glyphosate and whatever other toxins that we are exposed to on a regular basis, the lead in the air, et cetera. But the blood brain, probably the biggest one is traumatic brain injury. And we underestimate the contribution of that. That happens so fast. You get dysbiosis almost immediately after a traumatic brain injury. So they're very closely linked, the brain and the gut. And we just have to keep that in mind. There are tests you can do to look at blood-brain barrier. I think there's one that we do that has quite an extensive antibody panel that looks at antibodies to the blood-brain barrier that can be helpful. You know, you're looking at secondary markers rather than clear markers, but I think a lot of times these are patients' symptoms that we're looking for. So patients with things like fatigue that just doesn't have a clear cause, patients with insomnia, even patients with some mood disorders, depression and anxiety can have blood-brain barrier damage. This is where instead of protecting the brain from exposures, it's actually allowing there are tight junctions in the brain, just like there are or in the barrier, just like there are in the intestinal barrier, that prevent you from things being able to get in, like infections. And we know that in patients with Alzheimer's disease, that they will have little fragments of bacteria that are found in the Alzheimer's plaques. So we know there is some translocation of that material and some leakiness of the blood-brain barrier in those patients in particular. So I think about leaky brain in any of my patients that are talking about fatigue, they're talking about just generally not feeling well. Anybody who's recently had a big virus, we've had a bunch of flu around the last couple months, a little bit of RSV, which is weird because I've never seen RSV before, but yeah. So certainly when we have viruses, we know that inflammatory state is going to create that leakiness in the blood-brain barrier as well as in the intestines. So I think patients are going to tell you mostly. Again, there are tests that you can do that are sort of peripheral, not direct testing, but I think that there are some things we can know that would be helpful.
Yeah, signs and symptoms. You said something interesting a minute ago that in the amyloid plaque, you would find fragments of bacteria that would have gotten into the brain. I don't remember where I read it, but there's a conversation somewhere, and this may be more widespread than I know, that the amyloid plaque is actually a protective mechanism of the brain to entrap impurities, toxins, metals, whatever the case may be. And that is one of the reasons why there are a lot of researchers that are really not in favor of this drug that just got approved that kind of blows up the plaque, because they're like, okay, this is all great, but then what? Like, do you have a cleanup crew who's going to mop up all this stuff that the body's wisdom has kind of said, oh, this is no good. We need to...
Well, that's why hopefully we'll be around to help them with managing their immune response. You know, this category of patient is going to have a slow thymus gland response because it will be replaced with fat. So they're not going to have the thymic response that we're going to need them to have, T cell response to maintain. They're going to have those macrophages converting over to the more inflammatory macrophage state. So you're really going to need integrative providers to help manage that storm of inflammation that's going to occur as a result.
Yeah. And it's the inflammation in the brain that really wreaks havoc, right? Even in a TBI, it's runaway inflammation that the faster you can calm it down, the more you can mitigate the damage kind of thing.
Exactly.
Actually, I'm just wondering, as I mentioned that, is the TBI back, you know, a number of years ago, a kid got a TBI and basically they would be sent home, sent to a dark room, don't do anything, just lie in the dark, keep your eyes closed. For the love of God, do not look at screens, which is not actually a bad thing. And let's just wait. Is there a new or different evolved approach to that now? Because if we recognize that that initial inflammation is where so much of the damage comes from, wouldn't it make sense to kind of go at the inflammation right out of the gate?
Exactly. So that's what we do when we have clients who are exposed. In fact, if I have the opportunity to treat an athlete before that I know is at risk for TBI, some of my high school students who are football players, I will try to get them to take KE4 or some sort of ketone ester, and then I'll try to get them to be on BPC and TB4 because the research in those is really interesting. Most of it's in animals. But what they showed is if the animals were on the BPC or the TB4 prior to their traumatic brain injury, their risk of death or any damage due to the traumatic brain injury was really significantly mitigated by the presence of the BPC and TB4 before the insult. So if I'm gonna see them post insult and they didn't start and protect their brain to begin with, then we're gonna treat them with fairly high doses of those. But if I can get them to take it ahead of time, and particularly the ketone ester immediately following the injury, but ideally before their exposure, that would be great because then we're limiting that. Instead of the immune response being a conflagration, it's just a backyard bonfire.
Yeah, it's interesting. You'd almost want to get in with the trainers and say, listen, have your guys do a shot of this KE4, like the peptides it's a little controversial right now. And maybe if they take it orally, which I think is still at least the BPC 15, the BPC, if they take it orally, it still might have some benefit, but the KE4, like those ketone esters, there's no controversy around those. And for athletes to just be using them preemptively and then post-workout, there's a lot of good reason for it. It even improves physical performance, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's a really great, I'm a big fan of the ketone esters. So if we can get them to do it ahead of time, that's great. Just trying to protect their brains.
Yeah. And instead of Gatorade, well, or maybe you can keep the Gatorade, but have the ketone esters too. Just have them in the bag. Okay, great. So what you said earlier about the blood-brain barrier being susceptible to all these toxins, and you mentioned a couple that at the end of the day, I don't think there's a single person who's living in a big city who's not exposed to glyphosate, no matter how careful you think you're being, and airborne pollutants. So do you think that there's value in people a couple of times a year, maybe, or is there something ongoing that we could be doing to protect, to restore the integrity of the blood-brain barrier? Do you have your patients do that?
I think there's some interesting research around lorazepam because of that. It's not the main focus of its research, but there is some interesting research because of the way it works on the tight junctions. So I think that's curious. Of course, using the ketone esters is part of that. Mm-hmm. And then, I think all of the peptides that we've talked about also, if you could do that on a consistent basis, maybe quarterly where you're, you know, I'm a big fan of everything being done on quarters and realizing that springtime's going to be one quarter that you're going to do this category of this stack of peptides. And then the early summer is the second. And then so that you're seasonally following a pattern of how to treat patients and adjusting as you go what they might need based on their lifestyle and their habits and their leisure activities.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, that brings in that whole concept of cycling, right? I mean, people, mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of people will say, well, if this is good for me, then this is good for me all the time. So I should just use it all the time. And you know, I get challenged on this every once in a while because I was having this conversation with someone about Apitalon yesterday. And they're like, well, why? Why would you ever stop using this amazing pineal gland bioregulator? And I'm like, well, it's the equivalent of like nattering at a 2-year-old incessantly. Eventually, it's not that the receptors go dead, but you don't need to. Like you give a stimulus, you allow a response, and then you kind of step away. And then you may have to come back with more stimulus to wait for a response. I mean, that's just, you know, my kind of not medical way of thinking about it.
The only time I'm going to do a persistent dose of something like that is if I have a patient that's having trouble sleeping.
Right.
That would be, you know, that plus a little VIP I might use for somebody that's having trouble sleeping. And I would do that on a persistent basis just to get them back into a regular circadian rhythm. Mm-hmm. And then once they're sleeping regularly, I'll cycle something else in.
Yeah. So there you go. You're still cycling, right? You're mm-hmm, still mm-hmm. like, I'm not talking about a one shot, but I'm saying, you know, whether it's a 20 or a 30 day and maybe a couple of 10 day cycles to wean off kind of thing. But let's talk a little bit about VIP because VIP comes up over and over in the book in ways that I didn't really expect, right? It's so VIP is vasointestinal peptide. My horror story on VIP is not even a client, a community member who mistook the vial of VIP for a vial of semaglutide and administered the semaglutide dose instead of the VIP dose. And she was on a fairly high dose of semaglutide and she passed out. And then she would wake up long enough to tell her husband not to call 911 and pass out again. So apparently she passed out like 4 times in quick succession.
Oh, wow.
And she was fine in the end. Like it was all good. But it's an interesting peptide because you talk about it in the book for the gut. You just mentioned it now for sleep. So do we want to just maybe elucidate?
Well, let me make it really clear. This is not something that you take before you go to bed to increase your sleep. No, 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 no.
No.
It's a circadian rhythm augmenter. So I use it a lot of times in my patients who travel around the country, around the world, internationally, because with that jet lag that you're going to get just from time zone change, even just going to California from Atlanta, you get such a, your brain just gets so distracted and trying to go to a conference at 7 o'clock in the mm-hmm. morning and be present mentally all day long. So that's when I'll take VIP and I do it at the morning of where you're going. So if you go to California, you're going to take it in the morning when you arrive in California. Or wherever you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get back to your home, you take it in the morning of wherever your home is.
Nice. And that's one that can be used in intranasally, right? Or is it a...
Yes. And you don't want to use it after about noon. It will raise your NAD. And so you really don't want to take VIP after noon because you'll have way too much NAD and then you won't be able to sleep at night.
Interesting. That's an interesting problem to have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, and it would be interesting though, actually in those cases of jet lag, because I feel when I come home from the West Coast, I'm in the same time zone as you are. It's when I come home from the West Coast that jet lag is just miserable because you're trying to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning. Your body clock's thinking it's 4 o'clock in the morning and it just doesn't go well.
And we go to Vegas so much for conferences that's a tough one. That Vegas trip is a rough one.
Yeah, it is. And I guess the temptation might be to take it later in the day there so that you can last through the evening. But then if you prevent yourself from sleeping when you finally do need to go to sleep, you've perpetuated this miserable cycle. So, okay. So that's VIP for circadian cycle regulation, but you also talk about it for the gut.
And that's what it's you know, that's
NAD.
What it's originally, yeah, for intestinal health. So you just have to be a little bit careful. You don't want to have a high, if a patient has some pancreatitis, it can trigger some pancreatitis if they already have. So I usually will check a lipase ahead of time, making sure they're okay. And then as long as they're fine, then I'll often use this in conjunction with some of my weight loss peptides, the GLP-1s, because it can improve intestinal motility. So, so you can really get, I'm sure you're aware, but maybe your audience isn't, that the GLP-1s work by several mechanisms, not just by slowing gastric emptying. So there is actually an effect on the brain at it's called the cocaine and amphetamine receptor. And that's how it decreases appetite in the brain. But curiously, it doesn't just decrease appetite for food. It decreases appetite for water. Mm-hmm. It decreases appetite for alcohol. It decreases appetite for lots of other drugs. So I have a couple of patients on the GLP-1s for that, controlling their craving for substances that they shouldn't be taking. And so it's very, very effective for that. We just have to, one of the things, because it decreases the craving for water, we have to be sure that patients are intentionally drinking water throughout the day, that they have that they're keeping hydrated well, because they can end up with some kidney problems because of the dehydration.
So that's the dehydration issue. That's interesting, right? So you get this, I mean, that's the interesting GLP-1 storm, that I think that if the provider is not preparing the patient and setting them up for success, as in eat protein first, make sure that, you know, not even make sure you're drinking, but actually laying out targets for people. Like, this is how much you need to drink in the day. And if you're not, I mean, people are not going to be able to generally eat enough protein. They barely do, even when they're not on a GLP-1, like using tools like essential amino acids and, you know, like the greens. I like greens powders, red powders, just to get more nutrition, like more nutrition in when you know that there's not enough food going in.
Right. Yeah. We usually will follow them. You probably do this too with a BIA, a bioimpedance analysis. So we either do a BIA or we do a DEXA fit, the company that does the DEXA scans for their percent body fat, percent muscle mass. And I encourage all of them, they need to be doing some sort of resistance exercise while they're doing it, because they otherwise are going to lose muscle mass. And that's not what we want, because those muscles send out these wonderful myokine signals telling your body that this is a youthful, healthy body and it needs to continue to function. If you are allowing the catabolism of your muscles to occur, then you are not getting those beautiful signals. And that's really losing a lot for your overall health. So when I hear people say things like, oh, I got Ozempic face, or I got, you know, I have all this sagging skin, I say it's because you're not doing resistance exercise. You need to be doing more resistance.
100%.
Because you're aging faster than you need to, because you're not doing the things you need to protect your body with adding the protein and doing the resistance.
Yeah, I love it. And of course, the whole GLP-1 agonist space is moving ahead at light years. Like, we're not quite ready to talk about it yet, but you were saying, you know, there's more of these compounds coming down the pipes, and in some ways they're becoming more powerful. So it'll be interesting to see that. Like, I wonder if at some point there'll be a point where we say, yeah, you kind of have these different options, and you might say, well, this one, which is mega powerful, you might reserve, and you mentioned this at the beginning of the podcast, you might reserve this for the person who's actually morbidly obese, who has so much weight to lose that you just kind of need to move that needle faster. But then you might start to weave different ones in and out through that person's journey as they're progressing.
Right. And we're already figuring out the patients that we're going to use the GLP-1 GIP agonist combo, the new glucagon agonist that's coming in to the market with a triple action. We're already starting to figure out how we can best use these in which kinds of patients. Mm-hmm. And if they already have a history of reflux or heartburn or constipation, that's probably not a patient I'm going to use a GLP-1 only in.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to choose to use the combo with the GIP. They're just going to get a little bit more motility. Or I'm going to make sure that I add on the VIP, like a nasal spray, a couple of times in the morning, just to help make sure that we're continuing to move. I have a patient with MS who ended up with the gastroparesis post GLP-1 use. She did really well. She lost a good bit of weight, and she was feeling amazing and very energetic, and then became very sick with a virus and has really had a downward spiral. But she was when she came off of her GLP-1 because she'd met her weight loss goal, she is still having gastroparesis from that. So we're using VIP in her to try to mitigate that that side effect.
Right. And is that helping?
Yes.
Nice. Okay. I wonder how much also, are you looking at the gut microbiome in these people? Because I just recently, I should tell you about this. I came across a new microbiome test. And one of the, in going through my personal analysis without getting into any too much detail, he was highlighting certain, I guess, pathogens, like pathogenic bugs, like basically not necessarily the beneficial bugs, but they have a place there, just they can't be overrepresented. But some of these bugs actually decrease motility of the gut themselves. And, you know, I wonder if there's somehow with the GLP-1s, there might be a scenario where that bug increases and also contributes to that reduction in gut mobility. And if we had access to this testing and actually took a look at these things and said, oh, and while we're doing this, guess what? We need to, we need to boost up your acromantia and maybe see if we can displace this negative guy with like another bug of some kind.
It's another reason to add butyrate or ketone esters, yeah. or a rectal butyrate. You know, all of those are decent options. Keeping in mind that the way that the GLP-1s, one of the ways the GLP-1s work is by improving the creation and use of energy in the cell. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't just affect the pancreas, it affects all the cells. So brain cells, there's tons of research in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's with using GLP-1s. And I'm sure that's in the works to come out with a version that they will use. They're just so busy right now with trying to figure out how to navigate the weight loss. But they also, it also works on intestinal epithelial cells. Yeah. So these cells are also getting, and those are the ones that affect your microbiome. Mm-hmm. So you're also getting that benefit of improved energy, consumption, use, and, creation. You're getting that also for your intestinal epithelial cells. So they're generally functioning better, even though there's a slowed motility.
Right. Yeah. So it's all balance, right? It's all kind of balancing it out. Okay. We weren't even going to talk about GLP-1s and GLP-1s, but you know, it's like this kind of weird magnet. Everybody always ends up going there. So I think it's because they've made such a splash. So, okay. I'm just looking at the time. We still have good time, but before we jump into any specific peptides, because I did want to talk about a couple of the brain peptides and that kind of thing. The other question I get a lot from people is about mitochondria. So, and you just mentioned cellular energy, which is going to be all about mitochondria. But people wondering, you know, because there's so much chatter, whether it's through supplements or influencers or whatever online about, you know, do your mitochondria have enough energy? Do you have dysfunctional mitochondria? Do your mitochondria need help? And feeding the mitochondria and pushing the mitochondria and all this stuff. Is there a test to assess mitochondrial, how healthy or functional your mitochondria are? Or at this point, are we really just looking at symptomatology and or maybe, you know, trying different things and saying, oh, well, if this is helping, then maybe it is the mitochondria? Because we know there's a laundry list of, you know, not very long, but of supplements and even lifestyle interventions that can be beneficial for mitochondria. So maybe we want to talk about those.
There is a test that I know of. I forget the name of it. I think it's like Mito something. It will let you know at which point in your electron transport chain there are problems. Mm. So that's kind of curious.
That's cool.
I think it's something like $900. So I really haven't used it yet. But I think it is available. What I use that's again an indirect measure of mitochondrial health is an ox LDL. Because you're really looking at oxidative stress. Mm-hmm. And I understand that oxidative stress and mitochondrial health are separate things. But if you're under a lot of oxidative stress, we know that your mitochondria aren't functioning properly. So either they're overproducing or you're having problems with mitochondria because of the oxidative stress or vice versa. So I think that's a pretty good measure. The oxLDL gives us a pretty good idea. 8-OHDG gives us a decent idea, because if you're having DNA damage, there's probably something about your mitochondria that aren't working well. So the combination of those can be helpful. It's interesting, since I started doing oxLDLs, to see how many people actually have problems with that.
Really?
Yeah. Fatigue is a big problem. Of course, muscle strength and energy certainly is a problem. The tough part about fatigue is it can be 7,000 different diagnoses. So we don't know for sure what's happening. And there are mitochondrial genetic variants and mm-hmm. children who have mitochondrial disease that are out there, of course, that potentially could benefit from a lot of the things we use, like Humanin and SS31 and MODA-C.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I've come across over the last year or two, a few people in the communities who come in, like new people that come into the communities and go, you know what, I'll work out and it'll take me 4 days to recover. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to me, it's kind of like, wow, that's a massive energy problem. That's, you know, like you're not able to recharge the battery somehow. And I would yes. guess that really points to a mitochondrial issue.
And going back to exactly what you're saying, going back to symptoms, I think that's where we get the majority of the time. The testing that we do is just confirmatory for what we already believe is happening. Mm-hmm. And working with those patients, even using things like phosphatidylcholine, you know, supplemental things or IV things that can be helpful for them before we even get to big things like peptides, like the MODA-C or the SS31.
Yeah. And where does the Humanin fit in there?
So it's also a mitochondrial peptide. It also comes from the small DNA that the mitochondria have. It is one of the genes that communicates with the nucleus on what's happening in the need for more production of mitochondrial biogenesis, more production uh-huh. of mitochondria. And so what you're doing by adding the Humanin is increasing the ability of the cell to create more mitochondria.
Oh, so it upregulates what's it called? It's biogenesis. Yeah. Biogenesis of mitochondria. Interesting. Whereas, I mean, I know that, SS31 lives in the stable of compounds that like a pharma company is holding, and they're basically most likely working on bringing it to market as a medication of some kind. But before it kind of got removed off the market, there was some interesting use case scenarios when people were able to use it. We're not saying that people should run out and buy it, because you kind of can't. But what was the big, you know, people often, like I said, they get mixed up between, well, so there's these three mitochondrial peptides. There's SS31, there's Humanin, and then there's MODA-C. And very often there's confusion around which one is good for what. And in mm-hmm. my mind, there's always been kind of a sequence there's been a bit of a sequence where you might make sure that you've done something to try and make sure that your senescent cell load isn't too high. And then you might bring in something like the SS31, because it seems to have this, which is a good reason why it's sitting with a drug company right now, because it seems to have some kind of reparative effects, benefits for the mitochondria. You just mentioned Humanin, which is going to drive mitochondrial biogenesis, which is amazing. More factories for more ATP. And then MODA-C is kind of like the goose, like it's kind of like pushing the engine a little bit. Mm-hmm. So with the SS31, are you comfortable talking a little bit about what was observed when it was being used back in the
sure.
day?
and probably the best success we had with it was in heart disease mm. and in chronic kidney disease, patients who had these chronic sort of conditions. That's probably where the best benefit was, and where it was easy. It was one of the more expensive, so it was the one that was the most difficult to convince patients to use, mm-hmm. and so to try even. I would have thought it would have been beneficial in some of my patients with conditions like chronic fatigue, like like fibromyalgia. I did not have that great of a benefit in those patients. Where I did see it really beneficial is in chronic kidney disease. I have an IgA nephropathy patient that did really great on it. And then in some early neurodegeneration.
That's so interesting. It'll be fascinating to see when it finally comes out to market, what the, you know, what the prescribed uses for it.
What I understand is they've created a variant of it, and that's the one that's in phase 3 trials or phase 2 trials right now. That's the last I read up on it. So I'm not quite sure what they're doing with it or if it's even going to be around anymore. But
hey, folks, by any chance, are you feeling drained or stressed? Okay, well, let me turn you on to LelaQ. LelaQ harnesses the power of quantum energy to help you increase vitality, may help to reduce stress, combat EMFs, electromagnetic fields that can cause headaches, anxiety, and depression, can boost your biofield for better sleep and blood flow, as well as even slow aging. Studies show LelaQ products, which include the Heal capsule that I'm often wearing and the Infinity Cube, which I keep on my desk, among other items, are backed by science and powered by nature. They help to increase ATP production for cellular energy and can even help to promote a longer life and health span. Now, you can get 10% off your first Lela Quantum Tech order with code NAT10 at LelaQ.com. That's LeLaQ.com. And also, if you want to check out the Quantum Upgrade, you can go to quantumupgrade.io and use code NAT15 for a 15-day free trial. Let's get back to the episode. So it's interesting that you mention a variant, because this is where, I think this is where the research companies are going. They're taking these peptides and saying, okay, this is kind of how it works. What if we made, and this is ultimately how the GLP-1 agonist got developed, right? It's like, okay, GLP-1's this cool molecule, is produced by the gut, only around for seconds or minutes. What if, what would happen if we could keep it around a lot longer, kind of thing? Right. But you were mentioning, and interestingly enough, I have a good friend who was the CEO of this one company who now has a variant of MOD-SC that they've developed for a particular condition that is something that's fairly widespread.
Yes, it's exciting. And especially since we've now lost, this has kind of been a very exciting time because we got sort of resting on our laurels for a while. And so although a lot of people felt like this FDA crackdown was frustrating, it has the potential to be, I think it's exciting, and it challenges all of us to use our brains again and in a more thorough way to figure out what's the next steps. Okay, if that's not available, what do we do next?
Yeah.
So it's kind of exciting because we'll probably have some new things. We definitely have some new peptides coming around, coming down the pike. There's lots of things that are being researched right now. So this is not over. We have so much that's out there that we can do. And it's really, for a curious mind, a scientist's mind, like we both have, it's very exciting, all the new things that are coming out and that are available. So keeping your brain working, keeping researching, keeping going out there. What about this? What about this? What about this? There's so many out there that are really exciting. Even just doing preparations for some of my speaking things that I do where I teach, I'll come across a new peptide and go, wow, I didn't know that this was existing. This is so great. It's a bioregulator. It's an IRW, for example, a bioregulator, a 3-amino acid peptide. It's just really fun to go and look at all the different ones that are available that are new and out there.
Yeah, 100%. So let's talk about this, if you can, like whatever you've uncovered so far about this MOD-SC kind of variant.
Sure.
The biotech company that's bringing it, that will eventually bring it to market when they're done with their trials, I think is called COBAR. And and the condition that they have been kind of plugging away at, and this has been going on for several years, just because I know that my buddy was there at least 4 years ago, is fatty liver disease. And
yes,
and specifically NASH, right? Or are those two different things?
Yes, same. Yeah.
Okay.
And they, it's CB4211 is the research chemical. So I don't know exactly if that's the one that will ultimately come out. Maybe it'll be 4212 or 4219. I don't know what they'll come up with. But for right now, the research chemical that is available is 4211. And it does work on decreasing lipolysis. So there's less free fatty acid release. So you're getting less free fatty acid exposure to the liver, and they're not going to have quite as much fatty deposit in the liver. You know, just imagine you and I are trying to have this very same conversation, except we're doing it in a room full of cardboard boxes. We could still accomplish our goal, but it would be much more difficult. You wouldn't be able to hear me or you, and it would be a terrible podcast. No one would want to listen to it. So the getting rid of that fat in the liver, it just allows it to do its job better. So all the time we talk about wanting to make sure that patients, or giving those patients the opportunity to clear, as you mentioned a minute ago, senescent cells, to clear toxic load. So all of that should be in the background and started before we begin to do things like a mitochondrial peptide, because you don't want to rev up the engine before you clean out the gunk in the engine. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what we're shooting for. Part of the trouble for some of my patients is they don't want to give up their toxins. And so this is a challenge for me is when do I override their lifestyle choices, and when do I persist and say, you know, this isn't going to be something that's going to be good for you, because all we're doing is revving up the problem rather than the benefit.
Yeah. And so, yeah, because I mean, it'll be interesting to see with a compound like this CB4211, that is it so good at reducing so it actually allows for clearance of existing fat in the liver, right? And does it,
yes.
And then preventing for further accumulation, I would imagine.
Yes.
Kind of both sides of the equation. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, can it outstrip the people's best efforts to load it up again? Cause it is, I mean, fatty liver for the most part is a lifestyle and diet issue. Is it not a problem? Is it not?
Yes.
Like, I mean, if people could lose weight, stop drinking, get the sugar, like clean up their act, it would resolve, would it not?
Yes. Most of the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And so
they have a genetic variant that's contributing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that's where something like this might really shine. I mean, we won't really know till all the data comes out, but you know, that's an interesting thing that you bring up on the genetic variant is we often in the peptide world will come across people who have a genetic issue that is driving a condition. Like for example, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. I'm sure you see this all the time, EDS.
Okay.
And so people who are not making collagen efficiently or properly or in enough quantity, and I'm sure it's more complex than that, but they basically show up where they're hypermobile and it can be really bad. Like I have a friend who at the end of the day had to have all her teeth pulled because they were breaking and coming out of her mouth. Like it just, like she has a very extreme situation. But you know, we get these people in the communities, they're learning about the peptides and they're saying, well, wait a minute, can these peptides help me? Like, can something like GHK or BPC-157 or even a bioregulator like the cartilage bioregulator, can this offset the deficiencies in my genetic programming that's not allowing my body to make this? Do you have experience in this world? Like, and that might be a case where you do use those peptides on, like, we don't cycle them necessarily.
Yes. So my only experience with that particularly is with a patient who had, what's it called? It's Sjogren's plus, is it Kraft syndrome? Where they have Sjogren's and they have Kreft syndrome.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we used in this patient, her primary source was her lungs. And this is another collagen variant, genetic variant. And we used thymosin beta in her, and she had improvement in her lung function on subsequent pulmonary function tests.
Wow.
And so this is a destruction of the, it's autoimmune in her case, destruction of the collagen. And we had improvement in hers using thymosin beta. Now that's an autoimmune condition. So we're upregulating her thymus gland peptide production or giving her exogenous thymus peptide. And that was part of her recovery. But so it's a little bit different than the genetic variant, trying to correct a genetic variant. Do I think you'd get some benefit in those patients over time if you did something like Cartilax to protect their cartilage? I do think you'd get some benefit. I think we would see that they would get some benefit. I think those patients, we have to be really, really intentional about all of the things. Mm-hmm. So making sure they have intestinal barrier, making sure they're doing resistance exercise where they're keeping their muscles strong, their tendons strong, doing eccentric exercise so that that tendon stays strong, even though the muscle is there, doing balance exercises so they're less likely to fall. I think all of those are really critical in that kind of patient.
Yeah, no, my dog walker is who actually said to me just this week that she has EDS and she stepped off a sidewalk into a tiny depression on the road and fractured her ankle. Like there was just nothing there to hold it together. Right. So me and my dog are spending a lot of quality time together.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, no, it's great. Except for the part when she decides she needs to go to the bathroom in the middle of a podcast. So eccentric exercise is interesting. I'm going to send you a link after the podcast. There's a guy that I had on, that has developed an eccentric loading tool.
Oh,
that's really interesting.
Cool.
And very safe and really fascinating, but it's off in the sideline somewhere. Cause it's just one of those things that it's difficult for people to get their heads around, and it's kind of simple, but complex at the same time, but it's a tough way of training for a lot of people, for them to get their heads around. Okay. So we talked about the mitochondria. Okay. We've talked about most of the things in our remaining time, which is actually a reasonable amount of time. I still get to talk to you for a while longer. I was thinking maybe, all the category of peptides people are interested in, obviously, but the brain is the one where, people are just really, really curious. And there's one in particular called cerebral lysin, which, in the research has shown really interesting data for fairly serious cognitive issues. Now, it is the original actual cerebral lysin is an extract from pig brains, which brings up the possibility of some issues that maybe we can talk about. But then there's also a synthetic version, right?
Yes. And then there are also there are some new versions. I forget the name of the new version. What are they talking about?
Is that part of the new peptides that is being presented?
Yes. Yeah. I'm still trying to learn the alphabet soup of the new peptides.
It's going to take a while. Listen, it took us all a while with the first batch. So.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. What was that one? BPC6? What?
I get a lot of BCP, BDB.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So we're still using the original one if we can get it, it's difficult to get, but there is a provider group in the country that has access to it in a legal way. So that's why we're getting it from them, which is great. And cerebral lysin is really great because it's a combination of peptides that are, that upregulate the things like the nerve growth factor. So it's almost like you're giving yourself brain stem cells in a single dose. And we give them, you can give them a bunch of different ways, sub-Q and IV and IM. Those are all available, or those are all acceptable ways. It has been very helpful for our patients who either have just sort of day-to-day cognitive fatigue from whatever they're doing, their multiple jobs, and their, we serve a lot of world changer kind of people who are always on, always going, always doing. And so those people need a little bit of extra boost to help with cognition, but also to allow them to sleep at night, allow them to keep going.
Mm.
So that's where we'll use that cerebral lysin. We'll see it, we'll use it a lot in the really early stages of memory loss. And then we'll use it in traumatic brain injury as well after we've treated their inflammation.
Right. So for the high performer who's really just looking for a little more oomph in their brain, and I guess what happens with the high performers quite often is they come into their high performance peak later in life when some of the systems are starting to dial down. And so that's where maybe some of these tools become really helpful. So in those cases, are you finding that lower doses kind of because cerebral lysin used therapeutically in someone who's really got a massive brain issue, like we're talking high dose by IV, like many days, like it's a deal. It's a commitment.
Yes.
It's a, you know, 6 to 8 week run, and it's integrated with a lot of different things. But in your high performers who are really just looking for that little extra spring, let's say.
Mm-hmm. And we'll have them come in quarterly, and then we'll just treat them with a moderate dose that they do here in the office. And usually we try to get them to come once a week for 4 weeks, mm-hmm. just to do a four-week treatment. And then they go about their business for the next couple months doing whatever. And then they come back 3 or 4 months later, and we'll do another loading dose series to keep them going.
So that's really interesting, right? So what you're finding is those loading doses, that 4 week course, will hold for a period of time, and then they can just come back for a top up. That's really cool. Now, cerebrolysin, is it like, I remember you and I talked about Dihexa in previous podcast, and you talked about Dihexa as, yeah, it's a great peptide, and you don't want to be using it unless you're challenging your brain or learning a new skill, or because otherwise it's kind of like, you know, throwing fertilizer on your soil and no seeds. And so nothing really is going to, I mean, your soil is going to be great, but not a whole lot's going to happen.
Right. It's just like when, if you were to give yourself any of the anabolic steroids mm-hmm. and expect to grow muscles
while sitting on the couch.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You know, so you, you have to get out there and do something to flex your brain. So I love having people go learn to dance salsa because it's outside of their normal. It uses the left and the right side of the body differently. You're using the top and the bottom part of your body differently, and you're learning and memorizing steps. Mm-hmm. So this is really engaging all the parts of your brain. You're listening to the music. So it's really engaging. There's a visual cues from your watching your, this is just such a perfect way to improve your brain health is by doing salsa lessons. So not to mention it's super fun. Yeah.
And it's fun. Like it brings fun into the world, right? Like how often, you know, I think we often think of these things as, okay, this is work. I have to do this and I have to do that and I have to do this. Like what an interesting way to get a patient to just go out and have some fun.
Exactly.
There's an idea.
Yeah. And certainly I have a patient who picked up the guitar. That was his, what he was going to learn. And he came back and said, wow, I can memorize the chord progression much more easily. I can memorize the lyrics of the song much more easily than I could before. I feel more creative. My creative juices are flowing in my brain. I feel like I actually have the ability to write a new song as opposed to just covering other people's songs. So that was really fun for him. Mm-hmm. Playing golf is a good way to do that because, again, it's visual cue. It's the left and right side of the body, the top and the bottom of the body.
But if you're not already a golfer, right? Like the caveat is it needs to be something new to you, to your brain.
Something new to learn. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So for you golfers out there, no, this is not going to make you a scratch golfer. You're going to have to find a different sport, table tennis, pickleball, something else. You're going to have to excel.
I can't tell you how many of my patients used to be tennis players that are now like, I wouldn't do anything but pickleball. It's the best.
I know. I kind of don't really get it, but I think it's because I live in Canada and it's, you know, it's not, but I know people here too that play pickleball. Mm-hmm. From what I can see though, it's, I don't know. Anyway, maybe it's slower. I don't know what it is about it that's so fascinating, but it seems to certainly grab people's attention. So going back though, so is cerebrolysin the same as Dihexa that you will get the most out of it if you're learning something new, or is it kind of a different, it's a different thing in that cerebrolysin is really just going to bring more energy to the party, whereas Dihexa is really about forming new neural pathways and building new roads, let's say.
So I think about them as cycling partners.
I was going to ask, would you use them together?
I have. I've got a couple of patients who are in that more advanced memory loss, and I've used them together in those patients. And they talk about the cobwebs clearing when they use the combination of the two.
Wow.
But the other way I'll use them is Dihexa oral for 2 months, and then the cerebrolysin once a week for 1 month, and then flip that again. So we'll do that cycling like that. And this is, again, in somebody who's having some symptoms of cognitive decline. They do, you know, the Dihexa does work a lot on the inflammation. So that would be something I would choose to use in somebody who had the fatigue, the mood disorder, an infectious etiology, a toxic etiology of their brain disease or their memory loss would be using didihexa because it has that really great binding to the AT1-4-7 receptor. That's that anti-inflammatory receptor. So they're getting, as opposed to angiotensin 1 or 2, where they're getting that really kind of high upregulation, the blood pressure goes up, et cetera, we're getting this really nice anti-inflammatory effect from the dihexa. Plus, you get a huge rise in BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, that you know, growth factor for the brain. So for both of those, for both of them, I would like you to try to get patients to do an activity or learn a thing when they're doing it. And it's just the cerebralysin has not quite the dose of the BDNF, and it's got more other growth factors, where the dihexa is really just that BDNF rise that's so huge and the anti-inflammatory effect. So they're slightly different in how I think about them. Mm-hmm. The cerebralysin more growth factor, the dihexa more anti-inflammatory, and the little growth or in growth factor.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. So I'm in our last few minutes, maybe, and you do this really well in the book. You keep talking about, you know, so this peptide and this and that, and this is great, but here are all the other things you could be doing. Like, here's how, where I work with my patients on improving their day to day. Right. Mm-hmm. And I talk about this too. I'm like, well, before the peptides or with the peptides, or make sure that also. So we just talked a lot about the brain and BDNF and nerve growth factors and all the things. Maybe we could spend just the last few minutes talking a little bit to people about, okay, you know, you may or may not, peptides may or may not be right for you. You may or may not have access to them, but here's some other different ways of supporting your brain and your cognition and brain-derived neurotropic BDNF and NGF. And I have a feeling I have some ideas about where you're going to go with this, but maybe, you know, we can get the Dr. Turner kind of, look, here's all the other things you could also be doing. And maybe not necessarily for your, like you were talking about, your patients who have more advanced cognitive issues, but for the rest of us who are kind of moving through our days and just wanting to keep it all going.
Yeah, I think that making sure you're getting adequate sleep, making sure you're getting resistance exercise, as we mentioned before, to get those lovely myokines going to help with the brain, removing whatever toxin exposure you might have. And this is a tough one because, you know, alcohol is such a social toxin. Yeah. There's so much social around it. But we have to realize that cognitive decline that occurs with alcohol is a toxic exposure, toxic effect on the brain cells. So you just have to realize that's actually what's happening, and that maybe part of your difficulty sleeping, maybe part of that is that you need to be at least cutting back. I try to tell my patients to go into training, what I call training, so they only drink alcohol on Friday and Saturday nights, and the rest of the week they're in training and they're not allowed to drink alcohol. So that sort of helps mitigate that effect. That way they're not having every single day exposure. So that is helpful and important. And then whatever environmental exposures, of course, mold toxins, of course, mm-hmm. if we can get rid of any chronic infections that are really, you know, Lyme disease, we know can be a really bad effect on the brain. And so treating those patients for those problems can be really helpful. We use phosphatidylcholine. We use VIP, as we mentioned before. We will use, oxytocin can be really anti-inflammatory for the brain. The ketone esters can be anti-inflammatory for the brain. So anything that we can do that's decreasing that inflammation in the brain, ahead of time so that we're not continuing to expose it to environmental toxins. I think about, for example, I was in my autoclave room the other day, and we're soaking them in whatever the chemicals are that we soak them in. And I shut the door to that room because I needed to do something private in that room with a patient. And whoa, I came out with such a headache because of that exposure to that aerosolized chemical. Mm-hmm. So just realizing that we are exposed to a lot of those VOCs, paint, new carpet, all of that. I'm getting ready to buy a car, and the I'm aware that I really want to get a year old at least car, so I'm not exposed to the significant degree of VOCs that are in the new version, the brand new cars.
Yeah, no, that's such a good point. And I think in the home, having a good quality or a couple of good quality HEPA air filters
exactly
goes a long way. And frankly, even in an office, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe even more so in your office because you have chemicals there that need to be removed from the air before they can do their thing on you, and especially for the people working in the office. I remember once I used to work in an office and one of the employees sat right next to the photocopy machine. And the exhaust from that machine is a thing. And she had the worst headaches all the time. And eventually it became like, I wonder if maybe you should get a, you know, to get a different desk. And you almost wonder, I mean, not, I don't know the photocopy machines are that big a deal anymore because nobody's using paper that much. But it's almost like if you think about it, those things probably should have been vented to the outside back in the day when they were a thing. Now I'm dating myself.
We use ozone and EBU now a lot. We'll use some methylene blue, all of which trying to increase oxygen delivery to the cells. Trying to trigger the response of the cell to the anti-inflammatory response of the cell. So ozone, EBU, methylene blue, all really helpful for that effect.
Yeah. So EBU, let's define that for the people listening, because some people may not know what EBU is. And I have a particularly soft spot for methylene blue. So with our last couple of seconds, we can talk about it quickly. Just in terms of how much is too much and the ways to use it. But let's first define EBU for people who may not know what it is.
Sure. It's extracorporeal blood oxygenation and ozonation. And depending on who you use, there's a few machines that are out there. They use different filter systems. And so the blood comes out of the patient's body on one side. It goes through a filter, which thins out the blood so that you can increase the surface area of exposure, the number of red cells that are exposed to the ozone. Ozone goes in, triggers the anti-inflammatory response, and immediately gets converted back to oxygen. So you're increasing oxygen delivery to cells. It then gets delivered back to the patient on the other side after that anti-inflammatory cascade has been triggered and the ozone has been converted back to oxygen. It then gets delivered back to the patient through another IV on the other side. There are lots of things we know that get collected in that filter. There are lots of things we think will also get collected in that filter that we haven't been able to prove yet. We know that that microplastics get pulled out into that filter.
Wow.
We know that immunoglobulins can get pulled into that filter. So for a lot of our autoimmune patients, that can be super helpful. So that's where we primarily will use it. So if you think that a toxin exposure has occurred, that may be something to consider is finding a provider who does EBU in their office. They're all over the country. There's lots of different machines that are available to do that. And a lot of people will say that they feel energized, focused, their cognition is improved after they go through an ozone dialysis session. Typically, it only takes about 45 minutes, and it usually only requires three treatments to get that effect.
Wow.
So it's a pretty amazing and quick effect.
How far apart?
A week.
Really? So it's 3 weeks, once a week. Can it be done in closer together, or do you really need that space between treatments?
I think you really need that space. And you're pre-treating them with, we do a little bit of chelation, a super low dose chelation. We do some phosphatidylcholine. Then they're chasing them with some, with a Myers and some minerals and some methylene blue. Because we're trying to get these patients, you're doing a cocktail of combination of things when you're treating them with that. So getting their bodies cleaned up before you put them on all the peptides that might be beneficial for them.
Yeah, it almost sounds like the kind of thing we should all be doing once or twice a year. You would almost
think,
right? It's a little bit like reducing senescent load. It's reducing toxin load, getting rid of the microplastics. Like it's again, this is one of those things that is inevitably part of our world.
Mm-hmm. It's just the world we live in, especially in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. No, well, I think we're right next door. We're no different. Okay. Well, I'm not going to take us down to the final second. So Suzanne, this has been an amazing conversation as always. Wow. I'm so excited for your book. So why don't we let people know where to find you, where to find the book, and just where how to access more of your incredible wisdom.
Thank you, Natalie. You're such a good interviewer. So you can find me at vinemedical.com or drs.md. Both of those are websites that have access to me. The book, if you want a free first chapter of the book, it's on vinemedical.com/counterclockwise, the name of the book, Counterclockwise. It'll be available on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble starting March 4th. And then you can find me on Instagram at Dr. S. Faree. I have taken back my family name, so it's Dr. S. Faree, F-E-R-R-E-E, and that is where you can find me on Instagram.
Amazing. Dr. Faree, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. I know how busy you are, and it's always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you so much, Natalie.
Before we wrap up today's episode, I'd love to invite you to sign up for my newsletter. Each week, I share my biggest key takeaways from that week's podcast episode, giving you insight into how to take action on what you learned in the interview. Plus, I share the biohacks I'm loving that week and why, as well as facts and tips about peptides for longevity. To join the newsletter, head over to natalienidham.com/newsletter to get access now or find the link in the show notes. Thank you so much for your continued support and for tuning in to today's episode. I wish you all the best this week in biohacking your superhuman performance.
Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because that's what helps us to be heard and to be seen. If you'd like to connect with me directly, or if you'd like to leave any comments, or if you have any questions about this episode, please reach out to me directly through my website, natnidham.com. And of course, if you're not already a member of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance community on Facebook, that's where you'll find me every day. It's a short application. Just answer a couple of questions and you're in and interfacing with other amazing biohackers. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.